Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hi, and welcome back to another episode of Digital Spy's Soap Scoop. Every week, we sit down to talk to some of your favourite people from the world of soaps before we dig into the biggest spoilers from Coronation Street, EastEnders, Hollyoaks and Emmerdale. Hi, Sophie, how are you?
Hi, I am good, thank you. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. The voices you're hearing, sorry, I didn't introduce us, are Sophie, who's Digital Spy's Deputy Soaps Editor, and me, Ali, our Social Editor. Yeah, I'm good, thanks, Soph. We were just saying it's fully in the swing of Lockdown 2, battling the kind of winter weather, but apart from that, I can't really complain too much.
I know. I've had a week off this week from work, and we were just saying, you know, there's limited things to do, but making the most of it.
Yeah, exactly. Cool. So this week's interview is this week's special guest is a bit different. We've got Leon Lopez, who we spoke to a few weeks ago, who you might remember from Brookside, where he was on the show for a long time. But then also, he's kind of a mainstay in the world of soaps, isn't he? Really, he's been all over the place, and he has directed episodes, and now he's kind of working behind the scenes on Emmerdale, EastEnders, and a few other things, I think.
Yeah, he's had his foot in the door, I think, on several shows. He was also popped up in EastEnders in 2016 as Claudette's foster son. So yeah, I think you'll definitely, if you haven't seen him in something, he'll have worked on something that you watch.
It was fascinating to talk to him about making that transition from kind of being in front of the camera to then directing and doing various things. And he just kind of knows the world of soaps really intimately, which is quite fun, actually, to kind of get his read on kind of the different challenges facing soap actors now versus when he was kind of on Brookside, and then talking a little bit about Brookside more specifically, a kind of why he felt it was such an important show at the time and what the legacy of that's been. So yeah, a really interesting chat, I thought.
Yeah, it was really interesting. I learned a lot from him, and he's just a really, really fascinating guy with loads of stories to tell, isn't he?
Yeah, and really nice, like everyone we've spoken to for the show. Yeah. He was really lovely, very chatty, good fun. So yeah, without further ado, we'll leave you in the capable hands of us from a few weeks ago, and enjoy.
Hi, Leon, how are you?
Hello, I'm good, thank you, Sophie.
Thank you so much for joining us on our Soap Scoop podcast. We're really excited to have you on the show.
Oh, thank you for asking me.
So you've been in the soap world on and off for about 22 years, I think since 1999 when you joined Brookside. That's very impressive. So what do you think the secret is to your longevity? It's a tough question to kick off with, I know.
I don't think there's any secret to any... The thing is, I've never put, like, any limitations on myself for what I do within work, even though, like, over the years, I've kind of gone from working in, like... Brookside was my first professional job. And then I've been very lucky, as the years have gone on, to work on great television shows and then to work in great theatre. And the one thing I've noticed over all of that is there's a lot of stigma in every day, you know, the stigma to all. You go into kind of more artsy kind of, you know, off West Endy type stuff and where everyone thinks they're really highbrow, and then they look down the nose at you because you used to be in a soap opera. And then, you know, you do musicals and then you looked at a bit better because you're in a soap opera, but then when you go to something else, they look down your nose because they think you're a musical theatre person. And I think for me, just having an open mind and not be limited to what I want to do. I remember when I did a show at the Dunmoor, and like the director at the time was like, oh, would you ever do a soap again? And I was like, well, of course I would. And then he was like, really? But you know, you're here and then you're working there, and you're, and it was like, for crying out loud, you know, we're all self-employed struggling artists most of the time. Just to actually have a job is a blessing in this industry, even more so now. So I think like the secret for me is just being the fact to keep an open mind, and when you enjoy something, just do it. Don't worry about what people think and how snobby people can be. You know, it's the industry can be really, really tough in that way, especially for people starting out feeling like they have to conform to kind of fit into a box. And also the industry makes you feel like you have to fit into a box. Certain casting directors won't see people if they've got certain backgrounds, or they'll only see people from certain agents and things like that. And, you know, I think there's a lot of laziness in the industry when it comes to things like that.
That's super interesting. I just want to jump in because I'm just like, speaking from your experience then in terms of the reception you had from like moving from a soap to doing kind of like say theatre in the West End, is that something you, so basically I'm thinking about the movie that you made, you know, 5 years ago, Soft Lad, with Daniel Brockerbank and John Labour, who are both obviously have soaps backgrounds as well. Is that something you kind of like were obviously, like you say, much more open to kind of taking people that you knew from kind of the world of soaps because you knew that the stigma that was there and could be avoided?
Again, it was like, you know, Johnny hadn't done any acting. He'd just come straight out of college. He'd done like one production, theatre production. So it was actually doing Soft Lad when his agent came to see when we did the screening of Soft Lad, which is what started putting him up for more television stuff. So he kind of got EastEnders off the back of like the Soft Lad stuff. Dan never got Coronation Street off the back of it, but he got it off the back of him being Dan Brockerbank, but he hadn't been cast in Coronation Street. They both got cast after we'd finished rapping. But again, it's like, I don't have that thing. For me, I find somebody, if I'm working with people and I get on with them and they're right for the part and whatever, you just get that connection, you feel an energy for it. It's not like, because this person's done this or this person's done that. If you have someone who's got a good profile, like having Dan in Soft Lad really helped sell Soft Lad because he had a massive profile before. But I met Dan I was acting in a short film with him. And whilst I was on the short film, I was talking about the project. And this was before we had any money. It was probably about 3 years before we even filmed it. And he read the script, said he liked it. And if I got a chance to do it, he'd be up for it. And that's kind of how that happened. But again, it's like, I always, whenever I make something of my own that's not like a mainstream television type thing, then I usually write stuff with people in mind. And a lot of the time, the people who are around me tend to have been over the years, a lot of musical theatre type people. And there is a struggle, you know, I started a sideline business making showreels for people, which is kind of what got me into direct. Well, it kind of helped me hone my directing skills. And again, I was aiming it at all of the amazing people who I'd worked with in musical theatre who just struggled to be seen by people. Because at the time, you know, now self-made showreels are standard, but there was only one guy in North London who was doing it over here. And I'd gone to LA at the time because I was considering moving over there for acting. And there was a few companies doing it over there. So I just looked at what they were doing and what equipment they were using and kind of tried to copy that model over here. And again, working with amazingly talented people, writing stuff for them. So I got to work on my writing skills, and then I got to work on my lighting skills. And, you know, I was getting paid to do it so I could employ people who, you know, and help build up other people's careers as well as my own. And now it's amazing. Like I watch soaps, I watch dramas, and I keep seeing people who I did showreels for years ago. And I'm like, oh, I did theirs, and oh, I did theirs. And that's really nice and kind of empowering. And there's a couple of people who I worked with who were well established in theatre, who I did the showreels for, and then they went on to secure, you know, television contracts. And again, there was one of the girls, I'm not saying her name, but she sent me a message a few months ago saying, you know, thank you so much, if it wasn't for you I wouldn't be doing this. And I was like, well, it's not me, it's your talent that's done it. But it's like, it makes me feel really happy when you just kind of have success stories like that.
That's so nice. And Brookside especially, like, it's remembered for being quite groundbreaking and tackling lots of big storylines and really being the first soap to do that. So is that something you're proud of, like to be part of that?
100%. I mean, it's a legacy that kind of follows me to this day. And at the time, the lovely thing about it was didn't have a clue. You know, I'm a little kid from Liverpool, Toxteth, do you know what I mean? It's like, you know, I've got my mum and my brothers and like they're my biggest champions. And, you know, my family are always behind me. And it was a case of like, I was just thankful to be working. I mean, I've gone from kind of doing a paper round practically, well, that's part-time job collecting glasses, to like earning an awful lot of money and traveling the world on my own and doing all these things. And it was like, it gave me access to a world that I knew was out there, but I never would have been able to experience. Do you know what I mean? It's like, but then off the back of that, you know, even I was there towards the end of the show, but the story, like we dealt with, I even think like my character and Suzanne Collins, who played my girlfriend, we were one of the first like interracial couples on television, and I didn't know that. Someone told me that later on, and I was a bit like, in soap world, there was never really that. Like, we were one of, if we weren't the first, we were one of the first, which you think is a bit random to kind of nowadays looking back, you know. It was massive racial storylines about race relations, which is very relatable to what's going on today, and it's kind of, that was like a big thing. It's like having been able to do like having affairs, all these random things that you'd never normally get to do or whatever, and being part of storylines that were just challenge people's perceptions. You know, you going out at like the television show was going at what, 7:30, 8 o'clock, you know, going out to a wide mainstream audience, but you're tackling really taboo things, and not just for the sake of, people might say, you know, it might be to get attention or whatever, but no, it's the same way. I feel like Hollyoaks has kind of continued the legacy in a way, because they're actually dealing with stuff that other shows are afraid to speak about. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? It's like, there's that kind of, and also maybe not even necessarily afraid, but the audiences for the other shows are very comfortable where it is. Whereas when you've got something that is on Channel 4, not as much today, but especially back then, they could kind of push the boat out a little bit more and get away with a little bit more, be a little bit more dangerous and just spark conversation. You know, it's like, yeah, it was, I'm very proud to have been part of it.
I think it's, like you say, especially Channel 4, but like, you know, soaps on their best days are about, like everyone always says, about holding a mirror up or saying, you know, like, this is happening, you know, what you, if, and now it's happening in your living room, so have that conversation.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, and the legacy of Brookside, I think, is definitely that.
And also,
being prepared to have that conversation.
Well, also to make you feel, to make sure people that you're not alone, because we're watching them on soaps, and just because they're not affecting us, there's lots of people out there that those things are affecting, you know. It's like, so I think being able to watch something and tune into something, knowing that millions of people are watching it and go, oh, wow, actually, I'm not the only person that's going through this. I'm not the only person suffering with domestic abuse. I'm not the only person suffering with, you know, racial hatred from my neighbours. I'm not the, you know, so it's like, if you don't see it, sometimes you can feel like you're the only person experiencing it. And I think the beauty of soaps is the fact that people get to realise that, oh, wow, I'm not alone. And I can actually reach out and speak. There's people who I can go out there and speak to. So I think, and I think that gets lost a lot of the time, because people, put soaps down for being too everyday. But actually, everyday is something that we all need, because some people are very lonely and some people are on their own, and their only outlet is watching the soap operas of an evening time. So it's like...
it's like a comfort blanket, isn't it? I think it's there in your room and you feel like it's something that you can rely on sort of day in, day out. Yeah.
Speaking about kind of your time in Brookside and kind of the role of soaps now, do you think, is there anything you kind of, when you look out across like Soapland, let's say, like what would you say are kind of the big differences, either in terms of the storylines or the kind of the production of things compared to, you know, when you kind of started on the show back in the late 90s, like what kind of the big differences there?
I don't really feel like there's any differences. I think the only differences today is just the technical values have changed slightly. But I think as in the content and the stuff that's in there, it's like, I feel if anything, since Brookside has gone, other soaps have kind of come up to that whole, you know, they're not afraid of the danger as much. And I think there's a little bit more freedom for people to push the boat out a lot more. And, you know, maybe I didn't watch as much of the other soaps. I watch a lot more soaps now because I'm directing, you know, three of them. But it's like, it's kind of so, but I do feel like, I feel like the thing with the soap opera is you always have to be telling the story of the times that you're in. And I think, you know, in the 90s and 2000s, the shows were saying what life was like then. And I feel like now they are, you know, it's like, you know, we've just gone through COVID. It'd be a bit insensitive for all the soaps to not actually have a mention of it. And I feel it's, you know, I'm working on Emmerdale now as a director, and it's like, they were the first to go back after COVID, and they were, you know, they did the whole COVID episodes to kind of, you know, show people going into lockdown, and they're still trying to keep true to it. You know, we have meetings every day about, you know, should you be wearing a face mask in this one? Should you not? Because it's like, it's a representation of the world that we're in. And, you know, in 20, 30, 40 years time, people can look back and actually see what we were all going through the lens of like soap operas. So getting back to your original question, I don't feel like much has changed in the structure of it. You know, soap opera is the old kitchen sink drama, people around the house, you know, that everybody can kind of relate to in some way. And I feel like most soaps are kind of sticking true to that.
Definitely. Yeah, I think it's interesting, like, especially with the kind of COVID situation, there's almost this other role, because soaps are so kind of, they're everywhere and they are in people's living rooms, they are there every day. Like, there's almost... Some soaps, I think, have taken on this double role as well. There's almost like a public health responsibility thing going on there as well, where actually it's massively beneficial to see people social distancing in a soap at a time when people should be social distancing. Yeah. I think there's something really valuable in that. And it's testament to how kind of not just popular, but important they can be.
Yeah. Well, it's a duty of care. It's similar to like the medical profession. I mean, it's just soap comparing soaps to the medical profession. I could see that a headline. But it's like, you know, when people are watching something, there is a duty of care in the same way that, you know, if somebody's pregnant on a show and then someone's delivering a baby, there's lots of research that goes into, you know, how it should be written, how it should be, how the midwife needs to be, what they should say, because you can't say anything outside of the box. And that goes for anything, whether it's a medical show or a soap opera or, you know, standard drama. If something's going to be broadcast on television, there's lots of things that are in place to make sure that those things, you know, compliance rules and things like that. So it's like a lot of it is to make sure that people don't go, you know, you're not going to put something in a soap opera that is so far-fetched that somebody can do and damage themselves. And I think there's a responsibility behind that. And that's why you have so many people. Like, it was interesting a couple of years ago when I first started directing Hollyoaks, I'd like worked on the show, well, the spin-off show, as an actor. And for the first time, I just saw how much actually went into it and the amount of people and people who you'd walk past all the time and didn't know what they did. And you're like, bloody hell, that's so much.
Yeah.
The actors don't see.
Takes you know, town, right?
It's literally thing. Like an iceberg. It's like the tip of it. And I think us as actors, we kind of get lost in the whole thing because we are the kind of the face of the front of it. But it's the most minute, minuscule part of it. Without no disrespect to the actors, it's like I kind of see. I think every single role, and the more I've gone into production, the more I've made me realise it. It's like every single role within that studio, whether it's anything, you know, even down to the fact of like keeping the sets clean, even more so now during times of COVID, which is like the difference between like life and death in some cases. It's like without one of those departments there, without one of those people there to do that job, the show could not go on. And or potentially could go on, but it wouldn't go on within the same quality in the same way. And it's like, I think, and I get why people at home a lot of the time think that the actors are the show, which of course they are. They're a massive part of it. But it's like the amount of things underneath it that people don't. Even when I started directing, they go, oh, people go, oh, great, great. So, you know, did you write that story that goes, I'm like, no, I didn't write it, I directed it. Okay, but did you write that bit? No, I didn't. No, not write, directed it. Oh, so what does the director do? And I'm like, oh, I don't think I'm ready for this conversation. It's like they just see Steven Spielberg or whatever, and they think because of like, they think the Hollywood idea of what the director is in, you know, soap directing from film directing is different. Soap drama from soap opera is directing slightly different. You know, they've all got their own skill sets to it. But you know, I've gone off on a tangent there.
We were going to talk to you about that, making that transition from acting in a soap to directing it. I think you've hit the nail on the head, right? It's that you don't understand the scale of work that goes into a production until you're kind of actually behind the camera, as it were.
Yeah.
I've got a question for you, though. Have you ever had to direct people who you've acted alongside in the past?
So we were thinking
Of course. Alex Fletcher from Hollyoaks.
Yeah.
He played Jackie. She played Jackie Dixon. So she was the very first scene that I directed in Hollyoaks. Wasn't actually from one of my episodes, and she was in it. And I was like, it was mad, very surreal. And then who else? I have... So Mark Womack, who is just in Emmerdale, we worked together on something before, and there's probably quite a few when I speak about, like, in my own productions, nearly everybody who's in any of my short films are people that I've acted with usually. So, and it kind of helps when they do know you as an actor because they know that I'm not quite right in the head. So I'm thinking, so I can kind of think, and they seem to keep, like, I don't speak in full sentences when I'm directing. I kind of go, you know, and then, you know, he does, and then, One of the crew came up to me the other day on set and they were like, oh, you used to be an actor, right? I said, yeah, I can tell by the way you speak to the actors. So, like, you know, because she does this, and then when she goes, ah, and then, ah, people are just thinking, who the hell is this psychopath? But actors get it, you know what I mean?
Yeah, but then the language.
Yeah, exactly. Mm. But then I think in the same way, because I've been behind the camera and I've off-camera operated and all my own stuff I used to have to edit and light and whatever, so I can have a bit of a conversation with, like, the camera people and the DOPs and the sound. The best thing I ever did, I think, was have no money, because it made me have to learn all the different disciplines. So now when I'm on set, I kind of have an appreciation for most of the different departments. So,
We were speaking earlier off mic about, you know, it's nowadays, I think we're moving to a place where there's more support systems in place for kind of soap actors or and actors and kind of celebrities and people who are in the public eye a bit more. I think due to for lots of reasons, people are kind of realizing that actually, you know, mental health and well-being and making sure that people who are especially like in social media are kind of being under such close scrutiny all the time. Was that something that you kind of you were aware of when you were on Brookside and earlier, or was it just not, you think it's a conversation that started to happen more now?
It was a very different world then. I mean, we're only talking 20 years ago, but it's very different to what it is now. I mean, I'm on social media. I'm on Twitter, Facebook, the standard things, but it's like, those types of things are tools to be used in your life, but sadly they're not being used as tools, they're being used as, you know, an extension of people's lives, and with that comes an awful lot of heartache, an awful lot of pain. It's like, I was around just at the time, you know, the internet wasn't very old when I was first in Brookside, but, you know, chat rooms, I remember people sending me links to chat rooms where people are posting pictures of me saying nasty things, and I'm quite thick-skinned, and yes, sometimes it hit. Did I ever cry about it? Probably not. But it's like, if I was being bombarded by 100,000 people all day, would it affect me? Of course it would. You know, I choose now to kind of turn off to the things. But I think, again, there's a duty of care from these shows. And I think a lot of them do. A lot of the soaps, I know that, especially Hollyoaks being a young show, I think there's places and resources that they provide to a lot of the young actors. But for me back then, I was very lucky that I was working with amazing older actors who, you know, were like, get yourself a mortgage, make sure your taxes are being done. All the basic things that they don't really teach you. And then, you know, there was kids that I knew who were acting, who were, you know, filing for bankruptcy at like 16, 17, because they didn't realise that. So it's like those type of things. I think people are a lot more savvy now because of social media, but then also the social media can control a lot of, when it comes to actors, a lot of actors are tailoring the performances around social media because people have said they don't like certain things that the characters do. And it's a bit like, well, that's your character. But then to say that, if I was acting in a show like that now, would I be affected by it? I'd probably take myself off it a lot more. I'm quite outspoken and verbal. I'd probably be arguing with people a lot more. I mean, I still do. But it's like, I did suffer with it a little bit, as I say, through like various chat rooms. And again, like I'm gay and I wasn't publicly out when I first started in shows. You know, I wasn't even out to myself, never mind publicly. But again, it's like, I'd go places as a gay man, you know, I had a bit of money, I'd travel around to Europe and people would spot me I could be a little bit more anonymous around there, but then I'd still get people who'd send me messages saying that I should be doing certain things as a gay man that I wasn't doing. And it was like putting lots of pressure on me and things like that. But there was the pressure from the media. Should I be publicly gay? Should I not be publicly gay? You know, magazines not wanting to do articles if I didn't come out, and papers threatening to and all those things. But to do that under the microscope of today, be a nightmare. So
yeah, I think social media is a very different beast, isn't it, these days? And people forget that there's people behind these Instagram pages and Twitter pages.
Yeah.
But then I think the people who run the pages themselves, the actors, the performers or whatever, also need to be mindful of that as well. And be, you know, if you're going to put yourself out there knowing that you're going to be scrutinized. If you're going to put pictures up there knowing that some people are going to love them, some people are going to hate them. It's easy enough to say, but a lot of the time, actors are no different from everybody else. It's like they're just normal people just in the public eye. But you are, and with that comes insecurities. And most actors are probably more insecure than the general public because, you know, you put yourself out there for validation a lot of the time to kind of be told. I know that I did. I'd perform and think, oh, I just want someone to tell me that I'm good. And then when everybody else is not saying that you're good, then you feel like you've done something wrong and you take it personally. It can be really, really painful. It's not a nice place to be. But again, it's not that anyone should give sympathy to anybody. I don't believe in, you know, being overly sympathetic, because then people will be like, well, I've got good jobs, I've got good money. What? No, we just all need to be mindful that we are all human beings. And when you're saying something to somebody, just think of somebody saying that to you. And if you wouldn't like it, then don't say it. But people aren't that savvy. People aren't that wise. They do it because they want to hurt somebody. Ultimately, the trolls, you know, the people who are online saying all these things, they want to hurt people. They want to get a reaction because they find validation within that. And that's another issue. That's another mental health topic that should be dealt with separately. You know, how do we target those people who are so insecure that they feel they need to bring everybody else down and, like, you know, potentially risk people's lives?
I think it's the thing spot on. And like you said, it is younger actors. It's people who are, like, entering the public eye at a young age. And then it can be really kind of impactful. And that's when it, you know, if you haven't developed a thick skin for whatever reason, or you haven't needed to develop a thick skin, it kind of, that's when it can, you know, really do the damage.
Have a long-lasting impact, can't it?
But I advise, like, lots of people, now I teach at drama school. I teach at a couple of drama schools, and, like, I work with young people who are just getting into the industry, and also work with people who are even younger. And people say, what's your advice for young actors? And I'm like, just wait till you're older. Of course, there are parts that are meant, you know, young. You need young people in television, you need young people in theatre, but it's not a place for young people to be. And I always question, like, when people are doing it, I've worked with some amazingly talented people, and you can't dispute that, but it's like, just be truthful with yourself. Why do you want it? Why do you really want it? Why? And I think a lot of the time, people will mask the idea of why they want something over, you know, wanting to be a great actor, when in reality, they don't want that. It's either going after attention, or it's going after... And also parents as well, who are pushing the kids into stuff like that. It's like, why do you... I get parents messaging me, and it's a bit like, why are you messaging me? Oh, my child's this and my child's that. It's like, it's not about your child, it's about you, ultimately. But your child's mental health, your child's well-being should override anything than being on some television show. It's that it doesn't matter that much to actually risk some, you know, because there's a lot of issues that can mess about with people's mental health. And I think people don't take, they'd rather somebody recognize them off the front cover of a magazine, you know, than I don't know, it's just horrible. That's quite dark.
Very quickly before we wrap up, I just want to quickly touch on EastEnders, because you played Claudette's foster son, Limford, in 2016. So what are your memories of that time? And would you have liked to have stayed for longer? Or did you think it was...
Well, again, it was like what I said with the Brookside thing. It was kind of, I knew what I was contracted for. I can't remember how many episodes it was. And it was basically the character that I played was, I don't even know, was to bring in Jack's character. I can't remember his name, but Jack's the real actor. He's my friend. He played the Andy the Builder. So that basically, the purpose of that character was to bring in that character. And again, it's like there was talk, but I remember, like, there was lots of things that I can't say, but not bad. But basically, my friend who writes for EastEnders was constantly trying to get me seen for stuff. And I honestly think that they just give me the part to shut my friend up, because I didn't audition for it. I just got a call one day saying, do you want to go and do these 8 episodes of EastEnders? I was like, yeah. And I called my friend and said, did you get me that job? He went, no. He said, I was putting you forward for the other parts. And then I think they just were like, shut up. There's something. Can't stop back in my head. So but it was you know, I loved the opportunity to do it. It's like the cast there were really nice. It's so fast when you work in multi-camera, because before that I hadn't directed a soap, so my own experience was like Hollyoaks in the City and like Brookside, and they're all single camera shows, and it's a longer day and it's a little bit more intensive, whereas there you literally turn up, cameras are set, you get your block and you do it, you know, you're in and out in no time. So there's a little bit of interaction with some of the cast members, and they were all lovely, and you know, some people recognized me from other stuff and they were all really sweet, and there was a couple of people who I'd worked with before. But you know, you're working on a massive institution. I remember the very first episode went out, and like literally I was thinking, God, do I want to go through this again? Like, you know, you just got everybody comments, and you're like, oh God, I've had 10 years of just like trying to blend in, and now I'm thinking, oh. But you know, to kind of, it was a little box that I'd ticked off. Yeah. And would I do it again? Yeah, that I'd never turn anything down of a good opportunity. You know, it's like, it was lovely.
Great. I think what a good happy note to end on. Thank you so much, Leon, for coming in. Thanks so much, Leon, for talking to us. Really appreciate the time. Lots of interesting stories. Thank you so much. And we shall speak to you soon.
No, thank you very much. Nice to meet you guys.
See ya.
And you.
Take care. Bye.
And there you go. We hope you enjoyed our chat.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Leon, we certainly enjoyed speaking to him. And yeah, like we said at the beginning, some really interesting things there, especially around kind of the issues of well-being and things like trolling that actors kind of in soaps face currently, as well as more generally like the changing kind of soaps landscape. It's always interesting to hear someone's perspective on those things. And I think he has a really unique take on lots of issues.
Yeah, absolutely. And like you said just now, he's just a really nice guy as well.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, so this part of the show, we're going to dig into the biggest spoilers for the week ahead for various shows. So these are spoilers for episodes that we're running from the 16th to 20th of November. And I think we shall start with EastEnders.
Yes, so the big story in EastEnders next week is this very bizarre Mitchell slash Kat slash Shirley story that which we sort of alluded to last week, I believe. And yeah, they're sort of going to join forces to do this criminal job, which involves stealing classic cars from a firm that Kat is cleaning at.
Yes.
So yeah,
it's a tricky one. I mean, we don't have loads of details for kind of what to expect from it. I think it's we've said a few weeks ago, you know, we're very excited to see Kat and Phil team up to do something. It's bound to be funny. I mean, the scenes that we've had between them already have been pretty hilarious, and Kat kind of pushing all of Phil's buttons was really fun to watch. So I think their chemistry is good, and you know, it's hard to beat the kind of combo of Phil, Shirley, and Kat on screen. Like, it's a pretty powerful dynamic to watch.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the character combination, like you say, is great. But I definitely think there's an argument where there's a bit of like viewer fatigue when it comes to the Mitchells constantly getting involved in dodgy business and then spending loads and loads of episodes in the lead up discussing it and, you know, backwards and forwards, it's on, it's off, it's on, it's off. So it kind of feels a little bit repetitive, but I think because we've got Kat involved, because Shirley's also involved, and because it's such a great combination of different characters who don't usually interact, I think it could be quite good.
Yeah, I think that's definitely true. I think it's definitely true for the Mitchells at the moment. Like, I think more generally, think about like Callum's storyline and various things. And I wonder whether it's a symptom of kind of the current COVID filming situation, where it does feel like a few storylines across the soaps are kind of treading water a little bit as they kind of work out how to pace things. But hopefully, Kat and Shirley's involvement will kind of give the storyline a bit of oomph, and I'm sure we'll get some great one-liners out of them. And I also think it's interesting, we're seeing, especially in EastEnders, I think, across all the soaps really, kind of the pieces being moved into place for some of the bigger Christmas storylines, which we'll talk about a little bit later. But I think the things here with like Shirley and Grey and kind of Grey's involvement in the Mitchells' legal things, like, you can start to see, I think, where these storylines will cross over and we'll kind of hopefully get some explosive things going on as we move towards the end of the year.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, like, I think, like you say, we are on the home straight to Christmas. A lot of these stories that we're seeing now are going to really come into force like December through sort of the festive season. And obviously with this Kat, Phil criminal malarkey. We've also got Kush involved, and we know that he is leaving like early next year. So there's that element too, which I think makes it all the more intriguing.
Definitely. And then speaking of new dynamics and breaths of fresh air returning to the square, something that we're all really excited about, I think, for next week is the return of Kim Fox. She is coming back to kind of help Denise out, I think, and kind of be a shoulder for her to cry on after her and Jack's breakup. And really excited to have her back on our screens, to be honest.
Yeah, I love her. And Tamika's great. She's been on paternity leave for the last year. And I just think she's needed, really. She's a breath of fresh air. She's funny. She's straight talking. She's just what Denise needs right now, 100%. With everything going on. Yeah,
and I think, we know she's going to be good fun. I mean, the photos, the spoiler pictures that we've seen of her return, she's in this like head-to-toe tartan outfit. She's just guaranteed to be kind of bring some comic relief, especially at a time when, like I say, with Denise, it's interesting, we haven't really seen much of Denise's side of the Raymond story. We've kind of seen Phil's desire to get Raymond back was kind of the dominating thing in bringing that storyline to the surface. And we've kind of seen Denise and Jack break up off the back of it, but we haven't really seen much of her motivation or how she's really feeling beyond a few scenes where she kind of talks to Raymond and Raymond like looks away. So it should be good to have Kim there, I think, to kind of tease out some more of that story, because I think it's been lacking.
Yeah, definitely. I think what we really want to see, well, what I really want to see is Denise's reasons for doing this U-turn regarding Raymond, and hopefully Kim will sort of engineer that, because I don't really understand, because she didn't want him back. You know, she gave him up for adoption. It's a really difficult decision. Kim, interestingly, at the time, did consider bringing him up as her own, so that's quite an interesting dynamic. But I think Kim should really push Denise further forward in the story, because I think, like you say, it's been a bit dominated by the Mitchells, somewhat unnecessarily, I think you could argue. So
yeah, I think
pushed forward.
I don't want to rehash our ground, but I think a few weeks now we've spoken about, I think everyone in kind of the EastEnders audience is thinking about the amount of Mitchell exposure, and are we getting too much, and do they need to be in kind of all of the hands in all of these pots? And this is a case where it'll be nice to have the camera pointed firmly at Denise's kind of home life for a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, it feels like a Denise focus story to me, so it'd be really good to actually have the focus on her. And I think, you know, we've got Lucas coming back, we've got Chelsea coming back, so I think we can rest assured that is the plan moving forward. But yeah, I think Kim will be a really good addition to
the
future.
Yeah, and then speaking of the future, the final thing I guess to talk about with EastEnders is this. This ongoing situation, let's say, between Linda and Max.
We're shaking our heads. You can't see us, but we are.
Head in hand. This week we're going to get more signs of Linda and Max getting closer. Maybe Sharon's going to kind of, I think, get wind of this and try and intervene.
Because
it's a funny one to have Sharon lecture you about infidelity, but there we go. Mm-hmm. How do we feel about the Linda and Max stuff, Sophie? How are you? What's your take on it?
I mean, I just don't really believe Linda would go there after everything that they've been through. And, you know, we had Mick's little dalliance with Whitney a few years ago, and it nearly broke them up. And I just don't really buy it. But I think at the same time, you've got to remember that Mick is acting very distant, and she doesn't know why. And she just sort of, I think Max is offering something that maybe he isn't at the moment.
Yeah, I think you're spot on. I think it's that. At first, I think it is a bit of a weird one, but it does make sense when you think about the distance that Mick's kind of putting between him and everyone else. And obviously that storyline is really important, and we're seeing it develop, but it's obviously it's taking a long time to come to fruition. And so I think that in that intervening time, we'll see some development from Linda. But it's a shame. It's not something we want to see. They're a great couple, Linda and Mick. I do wonder whether this will be one of Max's kind of final stories, because we know that obviously Jake Wood is leaving soon. Maybe this will come into play into that a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, it goes back, again, we're rehashing our ground a little bit, I know, but it goes back to a conversation we had a few weeks ago about Vanessa and Charity, and, you know, how not every soap couple has to cheat. Like, they don't have to always go down that road. And I think Mick and Linda have always been very solid, and they've never
really... And they've got other stuff.
Exactly.
Like, they've got lots of other issues. And like you said, with the Whitney thing, like, part of the reason that storyline was so, like, was because, like, that's just not what we expect from Mick. So yeah, we'll see how it all shakes out. I'm sure it'll be interesting.
Let's hope Sharon can stop before it gets started.
Do I want Letitia Dean in more scenes? Yes. So at the end of the day, I'm not gonna be mad about it.
We'll take it.
Yeah, exactly. Right, okay, so that's everything for EastEnders. Shall we take a look over at Coronation Street?
Yes, it's another big week on Coronation Street. Let's start with this discovery about Ray. So yes. Ray's got this master plan for the Cobbles, which is all building up to the 60th anniversary, which we keep talking about, I know, but it's really getting close now. We're like
three weeks
away, I think, aren't we? Yeah, like very, very close. So he's got this plan. It's not a good one. It never is. Craig discovers a little bit about what's going on.
Yeah, it's a funny one. I think we're the kind of the overarching thing here is that more people are kind of becoming wise to Ray's master plan, like you said, and hopefully, you know, something's got to give. And there's some other interesting stuff here around you know, Ray's interactions with Faye, and obviously he's offering, like, he's bringing her in and offering a big part, but it's kind of, which we know is to keep Craig on side, but also, you know, obviously Ray's got this history of sleaziness, so it's probably not a good place for Faye to be, if we're being honest, but it's all kind of, like you said, it's all coming together ahead of the 60th.
Yeah, the Faye thing is definitely a little bit icky, and then he says to Craig, I'll sack her if you don't,
yeah,
you know, keep quiet about what you know. So it's putting Craig in a difficult position, because obviously he's got these feelings for Faye. He wants the best for her. Faye's excited about this new job that she's been offered, which I think is trainee manager, isn't it, across all the...
Yeah.
So, yeah, it'll be interesting. But like you say, yeah, this is heading somewhere big, catastrophic.
And then the other thing, the other two storylines, the first one, I guess, to really flag is the... we're going to kind of... the big storyline... that's coming up is around Peter. So unfortunately, we're going to see Peter kind of start drinking again as he relapses from his alcoholism. This is an really interesting storyline, obviously, for lots of reasons. You know, this Peter being an alcoholic has been such a big part of his story for such a long time. His drinking problem goes back over a decade. And it's a really interesting thing, I think, for them to pick up again ahead of the 60th anniversary.
Yeah, definitely. And like over the past few years, we've really seen Peter as the knight in shining armour for others like Toya, Carla, Abby. So I think to have him on the back foot again, to have him more vulnerable, is going to be, you know, the big question is whether Carla's going to step up and support him, or whether it will be Abby, because we know that Peter and Abby have got a big part to play in the anniversary again. So again, it's really warming all these anniversary stories up for December.
Yeah, and it's been a rough time for like everyone on Coronation Street recently. And this situation, I think, is going to shake out. There's going to be the straw that breaks the camel's back, I think, with Peter is going to be he gets his cab stolen and gets attacked, and then kind of that leads on this kind of downward spiral where, even though he knows he shouldn't be drinking again, he kind of has a drink, and that kind of, like we said, spirals out into lots of other things. It's interesting. It's an interesting follow on for everything that we've seen with the Oliver story and Leanne, and kind of how it's all building up and impacting everyone, really.
Yeah, that's how it kicks off, I think, because they have an argument over Steve and his the part he plays in that. But, you know, interestingly, Chris, who plays Peter, is really, really dedicated to the story. And I think he's even said in previous interviews that he wouldn't be against Peter being killed off from alcoholism or due to alcoholism, which, you know, really does show his commitment to the story.
Yeah, I think it's one of the great things about this is a bit of a tangent, but bear with me. I think one of the great things about one of the great things about soaps is that you get to see character development over a long time, in a way that you don't with other kinds of shows, right? And so here, Peter Barlow is a character that people have got to know for more than a decade, and something like alcoholism and addiction is not something that goes away, we know, like in kind of a short time or immediately, or for some people ever. It's a kind of constant battle. And so to see Peter deal with this for kind of year after year, and it goes away and he relapses, I think is a really interesting thing, a really interesting benefit of soap storytelling, because it allows you to kind of have that long-term view on things. And I think, like Chris Gascoigne said, like you're talking about, he knows that alcoholism is not just something they can kind of put on a shelf and be like, Peter's dealt with that now. It's always going to come back, and it's for Peter anyway. And so, yeah, I just think that's really interesting.
There's going to be, you know, a tough watch, but yeah, I think it's going to be a really, really good.
Yeah, another tough watch for Coronation Street viewers. And then a slightly, still tough for some fans, but slightly less tough, definitely, is the last thing we want to talk about Coronation Street is the ongoing kind of Todd Billy pool situation, where we're going to see, Todd's come back. We've seen him kind of meddling in things, and that's going to carry on next week. So we're going to see more of him trying to befriend Paul. Obviously, we know that there's kind of ulterior motives there. And I think lots of people, us included, are, we feel sorry for Paul, really. We feel sorry for Paul and Billy. Like, we want them to be happy, have a happy ever after, but it does not look like that's what Todd wants at all.
No, it's all a bit Shakespearean, isn't it?
Yeah.
And interestingly, we did a poll on the Digital Spy website, and most fans are in favour of Billy and Paul staying together over Billy and Todd. So
I think it makes sense. I think as much as we like, as much as people like Todd's character, we've seen Billy and Paul build a life together. And so now we're kind of like, it's a different kettle of fish to have him return and try and split them up.
Yeah, definitely. And I think, like you said, Paul's been through a lot and we just want him to be happy. And I think, Todd's come back in. He had his chance before. He liked it. So I feel like we just kind of, it's kind of feels like old ground. But, we'll see. Todd's only just warming up. He's only been back a little bit. So things could change over the coming months.
Yes, but exactly.
At the moment, we're for Billy and Paul staying together. But, as always, let us know what you think.
Yeah, I think this should be some without giving too much away, some interesting scenes, especially next week when Todd is getting Paul drunk and we shall see what happens. Cool. And I think next up we should talk about some Emmerdale storylines.
Yep, we have more couples on the rocks,
yeah,
on the line.
It seems to be the season for it a little bit.
Definitely, definitely. So next week's big, big story in Emmerdale, or biggest story of the week, is involving our much-loved couple, Kane and Moria. But they're estranged at the moment, but it's going to be, like I say, make or break for them. So basically, Mackenzie locks them in a barn.
Right, yes.
Kane is obviously after Jamie Tate. He wants revenge. It's not good. That's not going to end well. I mean, we all want Jamie Tate to come up and
yeah, we do soon, definitely. But whether Kane is the right person to kind of dole that out or not, I think is TBC, to be honest.
Yeah, exactly. And what Kane's got in mind probably isn't okay. No. And so yeah, she goes after him. Mackenzie locks them in this barn where they're really given a chance to sort of lay everything out, discuss everything. I think she really wants him to forgive her for the affair with Nate, but he had his heart broken, and it's a case of whether he really can put all that behind him. But I believe the actors are both rooting for a reunion, and they said that the episode is a really, really good one.
So yeah, I think it's either way, it's going to be good. It's going to be great TV. Whether we get the long-awaited kind of reunion that we all want, or whether it's another disappointment, I think it will be good. It's always good to have them in scenes together and kind of have them hash this out. So yeah, we'll have to stay tuned, but exciting stuff, definitely.
Definitely. I think Moira really is the love of his life. So I think, he'd be a fool not to give her another chance. We love them. We love Moira.
Exactly. And then, the other thing, I guess the other kind of more serious storyline for Emmerdale this week is the ongoing situation with Belle. So we know that Belle's been having these auditory hallucinations for a while. She's been hearing Lisa's voice, but it seems like the problems are going to escalate even more next week, where she has kind of hallucinations of Jamie and things are getting more intense. And there's some scenes coming up where she appears to kind of go into the woods with a knife. Without saying too much, I think it's definitely a worrying turn of events for this character, and things look pretty rough, pretty dangerous for Belle.
Yeah. Definitely. And we've got pictures for later in the week showing Kane and Chaz at a hospital, which does sort of hint at a dangerous outcome of some kind. But you'll have to wait and see how that pans out. That's all really sad.
Yeah, really, really sad. And it's a case of I think Emmerdale have been handling this storyline really well. And we'll have to wait and see how it all kind of turns out. But yeah, it's not looking positive, let's say, for the end of next week.
Yeah, I mean, this comes back again to what we were saying just now about Peter and his drinking, because Belle's mental health problems, yeah. you know, have spanned quite
yeah, that's
a few
very
years
true.
Now. She, yeah, and this is just, she's had a couple of other relapses, and this is, yeah, this is another one. But this one is slightly more serious, as in she's come off of medication. No one seems to be fully aware of that. And yeah, we'll have to wait and see what happens. But I think she's doing a great job, Eden. I think she's really, really...
Yeah, I think she's really...
smashing those scenes, yeah.
And then, finally,
one last little story for Emmerdale. We've got another Jamie
yeah,
Tate.
Yeah, one last
side.
Little Jamie Tate storyline.
Yeah, another Jamie Tate little situation.
Yes.
We've got involving Dawn and her offer to sell herself
yeah.
to him.
Yeah, it's a funny one. It's kind of like, it's a combination of a few different things. We know that Jamie... thinks that maybe Dawn's back on drugs, and we'll know that coming up next week, and he kind of is kind of suspicious of her and what she's up to. I think he it's a funny one. And basically he's going to find out that she's been arranging a kind of sleeping with former clients in order to make some extra money. Which is obviously quite shocking for Jamie. And then, yeah, it kind of spirals out from there.
Yeah, so she wants to keep him quiet. So she offers herself to him. But I think what's really interesting here is that Jamie's stories seem to be really branching out, affecting lots
yeah.
of other people in the village. He's really, really making himself unpopular. So we were wondering.
Ah, yes.
If it could be heading towards like some big whodunit type thing. Because that tends to be, there's always a pattern here when they upset every single person.
Yeah, I mean, this is pure speculation. Don't.
Not a spoiler.
Emmerdale, don't come and get us. But we do, you know, if you look at his track record at the moment, he's kind of pissed off Belle, Andrea, the Tates, Luke, Wendy, Dawn, Will. Like, the list is getting longer and longer.
Yeah.
And I think that's a very astute observation. And I do think, yeah, we'll. There's got to be. I mean, we know his comeuppance has got to come at some point. You can't piss off this many people and not have someone take revenge. And I think we're overdue. A bit of a whodunit, especially in Emmerdale. So yeah, I'd be
well up
for that.
And then finally, last but as always not least, is Hollyoaks, where again we've got these stories really, really taking off in the lead up to Christmas and more importantly, the New Year's Eve episode, where we're finally going to get some answers about the flash forward episode we saw last year. So we have sort of there's going to be finally some sort of discovery over what's been going on with the teens in the County Line story. I think Nancy gets everyone together, well, the mums of the village, so Mandy, Marnie, and tells them the signs to watch out for when it comes to drugs, and Marnie instantly recognises a lot of those.
Yeah, the stuff
signs
with Juliet.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's. I mean, I think lots of people, myself included, are like, it's about time. Like, so someone's noticed that stuff's going,
finally.
Stuff's not right. Yeah, good old Nancy gets the gang together to say, listen, you know, there's a problem here, and we need to kind of find a way to notice it. And yeah. It's interesting to choose. I think we were saying it's interesting that so we're going to have some scenes where Marnie confronts Victor,
of course,
which is a big deal, and it's quite an interesting choice to make it Marnie be the character, the first kind of adult character to kind of be in this situation, because I think lots of fans of the show will know that like Marnie's kind of like quite a comedic character. Sometimes she can be quite like over the top. She's quite a funny, kind of bubbly character. You know, she shouts in French, everyone in the patisserie. Like, and we love her for that. And this would be a really interesting chance to see a more serious side of her, which we haven't seen in a while.
Yeah, definitely. She could be a bit cartoonesque, can't
yeah.
she, Marnie? But I'm a big fan of her. But yeah, she's going to be taking on Victor. And I think, you know, she's going to be left very, very shaken by what he says in retaliation. I mean, he's not someone to be messed with, as we've seen, you know, Sid and Juliet in the past. And yeah, she, I think she kind of thinks, you know, I can handle it.
Yeah.
I'm going to give him a warning. He's going to stay away from Juliet. You know, I've got this. But actually, she really, really hasn't.
Yeah.
And she really, really doesn't want to be
on his bad side. No, he's a kind of, a big villain for the show. And I think it's a risky situation that she's getting herself into. So we'll have to see how it all shakes out.
Yeah, absolutely. But yeah, no, like you say, it's nice to see a more serious side to her again. It's been a long time since we have. But yeah, it might not be good. And then finally, with Hollyoaks, we've got the return of Cleo.
Yeah. So Nadine Mulcahyne has come back to the show. She's been off for a year because of maternity leave. And yeah, we're very excited to have her back on our screens, as always.
Yeah, she's great. So she's like Teresa, she's going to be coming back amid this ongoing, I mean, it just never ends, doesn't it? This situation with the doll, with the blackmail. So she comes back. She's very zen. She's very chill. She's very, I'm a new person. She doesn't want any beef with Mitchell or Scott.
Yeah.
And, but the thing is like, is this new Cleo A, legit, and B, could she be responsible for the blackmail? I very much doubt it. I'm not going to lie. I just don't think she's got it in her. She's a sweet soul, isn't she? I don't think she's got a villain aside, but who knows? The timing.
Yeah, exactly. And I think this is what Hollyoaks want us to think, right? With this storyline, is they're kind of setting all these people up to be, is this the person that's helping Silas? So yeah, it's another kind of question mark there. And it's interesting because I think we're going to see next week, especially Cleo's return kind of sparks lots of other storylines and gives new angles for lots of people.
Yes, especially with Mitchell and Scott. So this is all paving the way for his exit, which we can't talk about at the moment. But I think Imran Adams is leaving the show, which means the stakes are high here because Cleo's return is going to sort of bring back all of the issues that they've had with Walter and, Walter's very antiquated views on marriage and children. I think
he sees Cleo's return as like, oh, this will be, Mitchell can have a real family again and get his life, back to what I want it to be. And obviously that's not what we as viewers want, and obviously 100% not what Mitchell and Scott want. So that'll be an interesting new kind of new thing for them to tackle.
Yeah, and I think Scott, on the back of all this, Scott starts talking about adoption.
Yeah.
He wants a family with Mitchell, and it all seems like it could, it could be happily ever after. But at the same time, it's like if something does happen to Mitchell, we know he's leaving. Could Scott and his family think that, he simply freaked out and left?
Yeah.
But, again, this is speculation.
Yeah.
We don't know.
Yeah.
It does.
It's interesting. I think we're at this point with we talked about it earlier with different soaps. Like, when you have a kind of character's exit looming, when we know it's coming, you can't help but start to think, well, maybe this would be, this would be a good excuse, or this would be justification, or this would be why maybe people wouldn't chase after him. And yeah, there's definitely something here, I think, with a few Mitchell storylines that are all kind of coming together as Imran Adams prepares to leave the show.
Yeah, because he also finds, this is very crucial, he finds Lisa's body and gets cornered by Toby. We know that Toby was responsible for Lisa's death back in September. But yeah, this all ties in with Cleo's return, Walter's latest issues, and Scott's plans for adoption. So it's all sort of coming together.
Yeah, it's going to be a big week for Mitchell, is what we're saying, I think.
We'll leave it there. But definitely one to watch over the coming weeks.
Absolutely. And on that note, that's everything we've got time for our spoilers. Let us know on social what you're kind of most excited for about the storylines that we discussed. Is there anything that you think the soaps are handling particularly well, or think they could be handling a bit better at the moment? We'd love to hear from you. And you can do that. You can reach out to us on social at SoapScoop on Twitter and at facebook.com/digitalspysoaps on Facebook. And you can kind of read up on all of the spoilers that we talked about by heading over to digitalspy.com/soaps. Get in touch. We love hearing from you, kind of the things that you're interested in. So let us know for sure.
Yep. And as always, subscribe to get the episodes as they land 8 a.m. every Friday. Leave us a review. Leave us 5 stars, please. And we'll be back next week. Stay safe. Stay warm. stay positive if you can. Yeah. I know it's a tricky month.
Definitely. But... yeah, well, next week we've got, we're speaking, next week is all about the Inside Soap Awards. So we'll be talking to the people organising that. So if you're interested in knowing what kind of an award show, a big glitzy soaps award show looks like in 2020, definitely come back next week to hear all about that.
Yep, and you can let us know who you want to win, who you think's going to win. We're going to be having, we're going to have some great chats.
Definitely.
All about that.
Okay, and we shall see you next week, guys. Bye.
Bye.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.